Well, hello out there in podcast land, and welcome back to the Front Row Network of Podcasts, the podcast for people who actually like movies, and in this case, television, and more specifically, reality television, because today we have a special episode. We're going to be talking about Survivor. Now, you might ask yourself, okay, why are you talking about Survivor? Well, we've got a couple of reasons. First of all, I am a huge Survivor fan, so I am really excited to find some time to talk about Survivor. And a fellow member of the Front Row Network is also a massive fan of Survivor. So we said, hey, we like to talk about Survivor. Why don't we just record us talking about Survivor and put it up for you all to listen to? So please welcome joining me the host of our classic series, Brandon Davis. How's it going, Brandon?
Good. Probably the one host that people would least suspect would want to talk about Survivor.
I know.
But I have been I'm not a day one Survivor fan. I'm a day four Survivor fan. I came in season one, episode four. I remember the one where Ramona gets voted out was the very first one I ever saw. So
fair enough. Yeah, good. No, me too. See, for those who don't know, I'm a day one Survivor fan. I remember it was the summer of 2000 where the show premiered, and I was watching it in my friend's basement. We had nothing else going on that night, and there was a lot of hoopla over this crazy show where people were being stranded on an island, and we watched it. And I remember the minute that Jeff first said the tribe has spoken, and in that moment I was like, this might be the greatest television show of all time, because there was something so both epic and cheesy about it at the same time. And I was like, well, I was hooked. I stayed with it, and I've been with it ever since. So I take it you've been a fan through all seasons. You've seen them all.
I have. There was a period of about two years in college where I was just so busy I couldn't watch them in real time. But then one summer I caught up on the four that I had missed, and then I've been watching it in real time ever since. But yeah, I remember when CBS first started airing the promos, I would have been in junior high. And I remember thinking, this looks absolutely terrible. That was my first, reaction. But then I tuned in, like I said, episode four, and it hooked me. I thought, this is fantastic storytelling with real people. And we'll certainly get into talking about differences lately, but those first few seasons of Survivor, the casting department just cast really compelling personalities, and it just grabbed you. And, you know, who is this guy, Richard Hatch, you know, and why do we, we hate him so much, and yet here he is, you know, the first ever Survivor winner, and just absolutely, absolutely amazing. I was hooked from the very beginning, and it doesn't have, you know, maybe the cultural impact that it had from the very beginning, but man, is it still good television?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things that another reason why I'm glad we're doing this show is because I think there's a lot of people that maybe still don't even realize that Survivor is on. Mm-hmm. Survivor now is about to celebrate its 20th year. It debuts in the summer of 2000. So, you know, we're 19 years in, and the show itself has been renewed for the fall and the spring. So it's going to make it to 2020. So we're going to get that 20th anniversary, and we'll talk a little bit later about what exactly that's going to mean. But yeah, that first season is one of the biggest, I think, cultural moments of the decade, if not maybe in television history. And for those who kind of scoff at that, just give you a few numbers. The show itself, when it debuts, its finale, the finale of the first season, draws 51 million viewers. That is insane numbers. Those are numbers reserved for
Super Bowl, Oscars.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Major award shows, major sporting events. Like, this captivated the country in its moment. It became like this pop culture thing. And then the following season, It's number one in the ratings. It stays in the top 10 for the next 12 seasons. It's about to air its 39th season. And just a couple of quick numbers. So far now, Survivor's done 568 episodes. They are still, to this day, averaging about 8 million viewers, which in today's television landscape is pretty solid, respectable numbers. But of their 38 seasons, 23 of those, they've been in the top 20. 12 of those, they were in the top 10. 8, they've been in the top 30. They've never, the lowest rated season they had was, they've dipped to 31 a few seasons ago, but they've since raised. So it's still a consistent, steady performer in the ratings. And also, one of the reasons I think it is such is that there's still an incredibly loyal fan base. For those of you who are listening to us, maybe to decide, well, why should I get into Survivor or why should I come back to Survivor? The fan community, I think, is one of the things that really has kept this show going. We are adding our name to a list of about a million Survivor podcasts that exist. We're the only one that doesn't have any former Survivor contestants, I think, at this point. But, and it's, so I think it's just kind of, spread throughout the culture to the point where everybody knows the tribe has spoken. Everybody knows who Jeff Probst is. It's just, it's something that's still part of it to the fact that they're going to hit their 40th season this year.
Oh, I know. It's insane to say 40 seasons. I mean, because, I mean, it'll be the 20th anniversary because they do two seasons a year, but still to hit, for any show to hit a 40th season, I mean, you can't really, you can probably count on one hand maybe the shows that have done that. It's probably a majority of the daytime soaps, game shows, and that's probably about it, and news shows. But for a primetime show like that to have lasted as long and still have a rabid fan base with the kind of passion that they have, pretty rare. I mean, you think about all the reality shows that have come and gone since Survivor's debut, and here it's still going strong as sort of the pinnacle of the genre.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think some of that, we'll dive into that a little bit, because, yeah, you're right. Shows like American Idol, you know, had its moment and it kind of went away. Some game shows, Weakest Link, Deal or No Deal, some of those, like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, had like these kind of moments where they were really big and then faded out, you know, to the point where they've gone off the air. And yet Survivor's just maintained for 20 years and still and seems to be not showing any signs of ending past 40. I would not be surprised if we hear in the spring that it's been renewed for seasons 41 and 42. Right.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's because I think part of the reason of their success is, and we'll get to all of the twists and everything, but really the format has not changed. I mean, you can add all the bells and whistles like they do, but it's really, you take a group of strangers, unless it's an all-star season, and you throw them together, and really they sort of, over a period of 39 days, let you know what they think about you and vote you out for various reasons. And that has not changed over the course of the last 20 years. And I think fans appreciate that, and that's why they remain so loyal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's just, in case there's somebody who's never watched an episode, just break down the basic concept. It's, as you said, you start with a certain number of people, anywhere from usually 16 to 20, depending on the season. And as you pointed out, Brandon, most of the time it's a season of strangers, although in more recent years they've brought back players, anywhere from one or two players added to a show, to a cast, to an entire season of returning players. And I guess we can dive into that a little bit too. But the basic premise is they're divided up into tribes, usually two or three tribes. Every few days they'll compete for a challenge. One tribe, the tribe that wins, is safe. The tribe that doesn't, goes to where tribal council, where somebody gets voted off. As you get closer and the fewer number, the number whittles down, eventually those tribes all merge into one tribe. And at that point, it becomes an individual game where everybody's competing for their immunity on their own and their own challenges. And so then everybody can vote for whoever they want until eventually you get down to usually a final two or three. Most of the time in recent years, it's been three, where the last, you know, 9 to 12 people who have been voted out then turn around and vote for the winner of that season. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting where it goes from you vote people out to then those people turn around and reward you, which I think gets to the signature of the show, which is outwit, outplay, outlast, because it's not just a sporting competition. It's not just an athletic competition. It's a competition where you have to get rid of people, but then do so in a way where they turn around and want to reward you for your gameplay.
And that's something else I think that we'll discuss here, where in the beginning, your athletic prowess and your actual survival skills were to your advantage, whereas flash forward now here 20 years later, they're kind of to your disadvantage, where the strategists have kind of taken over the game. And if you're any kind of physical threat, you're kind of out early, whereas opposed to people wanting to keep you around in the early days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really fun because I've been watching some of the old seasons. My daughter's now old enough to watch Survivor. She's gotten really into it. So we're watching some of the old seasons. And yeah, the value of players who could catch fish for the tribe was really high, or who were strong in challenges were really high. But to this point, yeah, now, you know, physicality is one of the things that is seen as a liability. And I think that's one of the things that makes the show so dynamic, is that what do you value in the people who are on there with you? Because eventually alliances do form, and people, do you value people you can trust? Do you value people who will help you win challenges? Do you value people you think you can beat in the end? Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of dynamic, and it all depends on who, what groups you put together will dictate the course of the season.
Yeah. And there we have seen over the years so many different strategies for getting to the end and winning. Some are respected by fans, some aren't respected by fans, but it's always a fun conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, the person who has won the most, Sandra, who's won twice, has an anybody but me strategy, mm-hmm. which some people respect and some people don't, and it's been hotly debated over the years. I personally love Sandra, but we'll get into that. But that's the thing about Survivor 2. It's ever evolving, and we have found there is not just one way to the end. There are many ways to the end.
Absolutely, and I think you can look at all the winners, and you can, I think you could maybe lump a two or three in this kind of category, two or three in this kind of category. I think there's a couple that are just anomalies, or as one other Survivor podcast would refer to, a unicorn, yeah, of a player who we'll talk about later. But yeah, I think that's fun. And the other part of it too is it really, as a viewer, it's always interesting to see who you latch on to. And like I said, my daughter's really young, and so I don't think she's 8, 9 years old. She doesn't necessarily think about the game as strategically as like I do, as someone who's watched it for 20 years now. And so she's really into the physical players, the players who can do great things in challenges and win. And me, I'm like, well, I like the, you know, the nerdy kind of strategy wonks who, you know, and my wife is always likes the underdog, the person who seems the most, yeah, outcast, that tends to work their way up and figure the game out as they're going along.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. When I was younger, well, I still kind of do. I always, when, you know, it's the big characters that grab me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you kind of get older and look back on some of those seasons, you know, well, some of those big characters might have been a little more grating. But, but you know, it's really interesting what you value over the years. We've seen like GameBot players over the years who have, you know, zero personality but are really good at playing the game. You have to be compelling television, though, to get my attention on Survivor. And we've seen a great many people who have been a combination of both. And once again, that's where I don't know where CBS casting found some of these people, but they've struck gold many, many times.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think this also speaks to one of the things I think that makes Survivor so durable is, you're right, not every season has been great. I think even the worst season of Survivor is still is still some of the best TV you can find.
Yeah.
That said, there are some seasons that I have no desire to go back to. But the good thing is even a season that you don't like or care, a cast that you're like, yeah, this cast is kind of a dud. The great thing about it is they do two seasons a year, 13 episodes in the fall, 13 in the spring. It's always a fresh cast. It's always even if there's a returnee, it's usually we don't see, you're not going to see the same player 3-4 seasons in a row. You're going to see a new combination of players and new twists, new changes to the format that I think keep it, even if like, okay, yeah, this season wasn't so great, a new one's always on the horizon. And to me, it's like it's like being a sports fan. Some seasons, your team just doesn't have a great season, but next season's a brand new season. Things are going to change. And there's always that hope. And so you every week you're going to come back and watch and hope for the best.
And for some reason, it's always the premise. Whenever I look at a premise and I think, oh, that's going to be terrible, it ends up being a season I love. I thought Blood versus Water was going to suck. Mm-hmm. And that first Blood versus Water season is one of my all-time favorites. So it just depends, And the sometimes Probst and the producers will throw everything in the kitchen sink at an audience and they'll just see what sticks. They've kept what works. They've tweaked what doesn't. And that's what I also appreciate about the show, too. Most of the time they admit when they've made a mistake and they'll correct it in the future season. Not always.
Well, let's get into that then. And we're talking about seasons now. So in case, like you said, if you're new to Survivor, I've gotten a couple of questions from people because they know I'm a big Survivor fan. I have people who have never watched that say, okay, what season would you recommend for me to get into? And then I've had some people say, well, I haven't watched since Australia or, the second or third season, kind of when things started to taper off. So let's start here, Brandon, and I'll ask you, if you had somebody who had never seen an episode of Survivor, what would be a season you would recommend and why?
Well, if I'm going to go earlier, I would say toward the top of my list would be Survivor Pearl Islands.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is a quintessential Survivor season. It's got amazing characters. It's got three of the biggest characters in Survivor history in that season. Sandra, Fairplay, and Rupert. It's got a dramatic theme to it. It's a pirate theme. It sells its theme. There's a lot of times where you'll have a Survivor season where they will really sell the theme of the season in the first few episodes, and then it just dies out. Mm-hmm. They stick with that pirate theme all the way through the season, and it works wonderfully. It's a great location, Panama. And you just have some classic Survivor moments. You've got, Sandra's first win. You've got, the development of Rupert. Rupert really wears on you as his time on Survivor goes on. And I think Rob Sesternino, I believe, says in one of his podcasts, Pearl Islands Rupert is like the original, the original movie that, oh, it's so great. Then the next time he comes back, it's like the sequel that's not quite as good. Then the next time is the direct-to-video. but Pearl Islands is prime Rupert, and it's great to watch. And then, of course, you have the classic moment with Johnny Fairplay and the dead grandma lie.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Pearl Islands all around is just a fantastic season.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I'm actually watching that season with my daughter right now, and we'll get to one of the reasons why in a minute, in a little bit here. But yeah, I agree with you. It's a early season, so there's not. It still surprised me watching these earlier seasons how much the show it reminds you how much the show has evolved, because there is so much talk about the elements and surviving out on a beach and out on an island and the damage and looking for food and all that sort of stuff, which you almost never hear them talk about in modern seasons anymore. I think they realize, okay, people get it. It's season 38. We get it. They're hungry, and they focus a little bit more on the strategy, and the character moments as opposed to the survival aspect of it. So yeah, I'd agree. think you want, that's a great mix of both the survival element and some big characters and some good strategy that I think happens in that season, yeah. Especially towards the mid to late part of that season.
And yet it's also got one of the most controversial twists in Survivor history, the Outcast twist. So it's not, it's not a completely shining season for some fans, but I think if you want a Survivor season that's sort of quintessential, that has everything, even a little bit of controversy, you've got it.
Mm-hmm. I will say, if we're going to start with old school, because I agree, I kind of had, well, here's an old school season and here's a new school season. So my old school pick for people who've never seen the show before would be two seasons or a season prior, which is Survivor the Amazon.
Yeah.
I think that to me because I'll say I remember as a fan thinking seasons 4 and 5 were okay. And you kind of had a feeling that, okay, maybe the shine's off the apple a little bit, but season 6 is really good. And I think you see maybe the first, real turning point in the strategy of the game. They start this, the premise of this show is a tribe of men versus a tribe of women, which I think is offer some fun dynamics, but you have some really kind of interesting characters there. And, you know, no bigger than Rob Cesternino, who we've mentioned before. You and I are both big fans of his podcast, and he's gone on to kind of become the Survivor podcasting guru. So if you want to hear somebody talk way more eloquently about Survivor than yeah. the two of us, I highly recommend his podcast. But he really was a real strategic mastermind in that season. I won't say what happens in the season, but I'll say just that was the season where I was like, oh, this, you know, and some flip flopping and some blindsides that happened that I think make it really interesting. So yeah, if you want kind of a slower speed to ease yourself in, I think those two seasons are great because both of those precede what I think is the very first major, major upheaval to the game that really has influence the game moving forward, and that is the hidden immunity idol, which comes around about season 11, I believe.
I think so, yeah.
See, and so where you don't just win immunity at challenges, there are idols hidden throughout camp or sometimes in challenges themselves that you can choose to, you know, play at tribal council to make yourself immune for the vote unbeknownst to the people around you. Or sometimes you can give it away or sometimes you can share it and how that's been. So that these early seasons predate that. So I think you can see maybe a good template for what the season is or what the game is. And then maybe you can move on. So of the newer generation seasons, Brandon, is there somebody saying, well, I want something a little bit more faster paced. What would you recommend to a newbie?
Well, I don't think you can go wrong with season 20, Survivor Heroes versus Villains. Mm-hmm. Craig, our fellow podcaster, is watching it as we speak.
Oh, is
and,
he?
Yeah, he's about into episode 5, I believe he told me. And I said, oh, it's just getting started. You haven't even gotten to the good stuff yet. But I did tell him, you know, it does help if you're familiar with these people's history. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be able to enjoy the season to see that because they're fascinating characters and you understand who they are right away. But to know the history of all these people just makes it even better. But just to get 20 of the most iconic people to ever play the game, minus maybe a couple, to see them all in one, to see them all in one place playing together is just fun. I mean, to see Colby and Jerry back all the way from season 2 up to Russell, who had just played the season before, and to see them all intermingling is just fascinating. And it's got brilliant gameplay. It's got dumb gameplay. and the great thing is it doesn't get, we'll probably talk about Survivor All-Stars, but Survivor All-Stars got very ugly and very personal. Survivor Heroes versus Villains never goes that path. I think most people understood, even though there was a lot of negativity toward Russell from a lot of the players, I think most people understood it was a game toward the end. And, yeah, just great to see all those people intermingling. And I rewatched just a little bit of the premiere, and I love that Survivor by season 20 had become so iconic that all you had to have was shots of certain items and you knew who it was. Like, you saw a little Boston hat, you knew it was Boston Rob. You saw the tie dye and you knew it was Rupert, which shows you just how much of a cultural impact Survivor has had.
Yeah, I would say if somebody came to me and said, I can only watch one season of Survivor, I can't watch anything else. Give me one season, and this is the only season of Survivor I'll ever watch. I think it's that season.
Yeah.
For a lot of the reasons that you just said, aside from the fact that the gameplay is really good and there's a lot of blindsides and there's a lot of good strategy, but the cast is so good. The characters are all so great. It's maybe the lineup. I think the lineup's as iconic, if not more so, than the first time they did Survivor All-Stars. You know, that was season 8. This is season 20, so they had a bit of a deeper roster to pull from. But because of that, and as you mentioned, it doesn't get ugly. There's some ugliness in Survivor All-Stars. There's some ugliness in the next time they would do an All-Star season, Survivor Game Changers. This doesn't have any of that. It's just, I think it's entertaining from start to finish, and is a lot of fun. So I would recommend that to anybody who, you know, wants to familiarize yourself with the iconic characters of Survivor in a season that's also really fun to watch. That's the one. So my pick for somebody who has never seen a season of a more modern era would be Survivor Cagayan.
Yes.
And that is a season of all new players. And I think it's probably the best season to feature all new players. Because I think some of the best seasons have had returnees in some form or another. And I think so if maybe this is the best one, because I think you've got some great characters, including maybe the best, I don't know, maybe the best character Survivor's ever had in Tony. Tony is the one of the wildest players you'll ever see, that there should be no way he makes it past the first vote, let alone all the way deep into the game. spoiler alert to you know, all the way to the end. And so it's such a great season with good characters and good strategy. And I also think it's a faster pace than the earlier seasons, but I think there are some of these more recent seasons, I could see somebody coming in blind and there's all these immunity idols and there's all sorts of twists and new rules and formats that somebody who's watched the game for, you know, all these seasons prior can catch up on. This doesn't have that. It still has hidden immunity idols, but it's not, I think it's a little bit more streamlined. It's not overly reliant on gimmicks.
Yeah, and every single something that you can't say about a lot of newer seasons, every single person in that cast from the first one voted out to Tony is memorable. They're all individual, and you remember them all, and they each have their own special moment at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Which recent seasons, I would say from about like season 14, 15 on, I have a hard time remembering like the people who were voted off, you know, second to fifth. Mm-hmm. But in Cagayan, it's one of those seasons where you remember everybody. Everybody's pretty well developed, even despite how much screen time they get.
Sure. Yeah, I would agree. I think that's just so much fun. So in addition to that, so if you knew somebody that says, are there any other seasons, I guess, before we move on, that would qualify as some of your more favorite seasons that maybe need a little bit more context, or you wouldn't be the ones you recommend, but are personal favorites to you?
I have a special place in my heart for Australian Outback. And I think it's just because, you know, it was the time of my life. I was young. When you go back and watch it now, it's very slow. But it's got great moments and just another great cast where every single person's memorable.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of friends who have joined Survivor recently in later seasons, and I encourage them to go back and watch older seasons just to know. But, you know, it's just fun to watch that. It's fun to see you know, in season one, you had Richard Hatch who set up the whole alliance thing and, you know, getting rid of the other tribe and making your way to the end. Well, then Australia kind of takes it to the next level where, man, it's okay to vote out people from your tribe earlier than you thought and everything like that. And you know, Tina makes it to the end in a totally different way than Richard does. Mm-hmm. And you've got Colby and Jerry, the original hero and villain of Survivor, you know, so it's all there in that season. And I love that season. And I also love, a season that I went back and watched, and I forgot how good it was Survivor China, season 15. That is sort of an old school season feel with newer gameplay. It's got the idols, it's got tribe swaps, all of that stuff. But another really great cast, a great location. They really use China well. I really like Todd Herzog as a winner. I think he has one of the best final tribal council performances ever. Just swaying people to his side and did just a really, really great sort of old school season feel with new season play.
Yeah, I'd agree. So since you went a little more old school with your two picks, I will go a little bit more new school with mine. I mentioned Heroes versus Villains as one of my favorites, but I will say a season I think I enjoy even more that's an all returnee player is Survivor Second Chance.
Yeah.
That is a season where, for those who aren't familiar, was voted on completely by fans. And so you had all of these players that had only played once before. And to me, I think that was the key because it provided this real even playing field. Because occasionally when you have returnee seasons, you have, say, well, this person won their last season or this person went deep. We can't let them get far this time. And so that happened in Survivor Game Changers where all the big threats and winners got targeted early and you got left with, you know, some characters that maybe weren't as compelling as some of the people that went in the first few episodes. And Second Chance does not have that. First of all, it's a stellar cast all the way through. I don't think it's as iconic as Heroes versus Villains, but it's got a lot of really memorable characters, really good players. And it's the first season where I thought each episode, the boot order was completely unpredictable.
Yeah. And it's people who I never thought I would ever see play Survivor again. Mm-hmm. And it was so fun to see, you know, some of those people interacting. And yeah, it's totally unpredictable, especially those first few episodes after the merge. The way that sort of boot order goes and you never know exactly what's going to happen. It's great. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah, because a lot of earlier seasons and even more recent seasons, you settle into alliances and then basically a lot of times you'll get one alliance picking off everybody else till it's just them with maybe one or two exceptions. In this case, there really is a lot of shifting in dynamics through that season. And so that is a lot of fun for me. The other season that I would recommend that I think still has some really good strategy, but I think is one of the best casts in recent memories is Survivor Millennials versus Gen X. And you've got some really good strategic players in that game, but I think from a casting perspective, if you were the characters in that, I think I remember more than the strategy moments. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the other thing. There's some people who really don't like heavy strategy seasons because they say, well, we're spending too much time on game talk. I'm not getting to learn about these characters and invest in them. And then sometimes people will say, well, all we're getting is these character moments. Nobody's really playing the game. Everybody, you know, we're just, you know, the characters are big, but there's not a lot of moves being made. I think this is a really nice hybrid of those two seasons, of those two ideas. And it's also, as you mentioned earlier, Brandon, sometimes you hear the theme of the season and you kind of roll your eyes. And this was one where I think everybody collectively rolled their eyes because this is the era now in more recent years. Survivor hasn't switched locations. They've stayed at Fiji now for the past at least eight seasons now.
Because it was Cambodia for 31 and 32, and then since then it's been Fiji.
So. Correct. Okay, so 33 on. Yeah. So instead of, they can't call it Survivor Fiji every time, so they give you these different themes, and it's kind of a tradition now of Survivor fans of hearing the new theme and immediately going, oh, that sounds so dumb.
I felt that way for Survivor David versus Goliath, and it's one of my favorites. I adored it. It was so fantastic.
Yeah, it's a great, and that's to me where if you hear the theme of the season, and we'll talk about, I think we're going to talk about that with this with season 39.
Yeah.
I have just stopped worrying about what the theme is.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the theme that you're doing. Okay, that's fine. As long as you still give me compelling characters and a good gameplay, the theme, you know, is to me is always just like the location. I'm not, a lot of people are like, well, I wish they would go back here or go there or switch it up there. And to me, the location hasn't mattered to me as much as the casting and the gameplay.
Yeah. It was exciting early on, but then once they went to those big locations, they really ran out of other places to go. So once you've been to Africa and to Australia and to China, I mean, what else is going to impress you? So, mm-hmm. It's become less about the logo. I mean, it was fun in those earlier seasons, but yeah, now as long as you give me a good cast, you can just, you know, mm-hmm. on the same island every time.
All right. So before we move away from seasons and talk a little bit more about the specific players. Is there one season that maybe is an outlier for you? That's a season you like that maybe doesn't get a lot of love from the Survivor community that you would say that you'd stick up for?
Yeah, I really, I don't know that it necessarily doesn't get picked up. I do like Survivor Marquesas. I think it sort of gets a bad rap. I think it doesn't have a very exciting ending. But I think overall the cast is very good. I like that it was the very first time, post merge where the people on the bottom of the two major alliances figured out, hey, we could team up together and get rid of the people on the top. Mm-hmm. And so when you go back and watch that, that's fascinating. So in terms of an older season, but one that I liked that's sort of more recent that doesn't really get a whole lot of love. I like Survivor Samoa. And I know that it sort of becomes the Russell show, but I think it's a pretty stellar cast, and it's actually fun when you go back and watch it. So Samoa is another fun scene.
Yeah, I'd agree. And this is one of the things where I think Survivor sometimes does itself a disservice when it comes to returning players.
Yeah.
Because we got Russell Hance is one of the maybe best, biggest villains of the show in this season, in the show's history. But he's also maybe one of the most exciting players to have on a season. Unfortunately, and Survivor recognized that they put him on 3 out of 4 seasons in a row. Mm. And I think Russell fatigue sat in really hard.
Yes.
And, but I would agree with you. I did a rewatch. It was 2 summers ago of everything. And Samoa in a vacuum, I think is a really solid season. And he plays a really compelling game. He really does.
Yeah.
He does. And the supporting players around him are interesting. But yeah, his act can get old, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess one last thing before we jump off of seasons, what's the one season you would tell people to 100% avoid?
I really did not like Survivor Karamoan. I, of course, Survivor Thailand's one that I can't stand. But Survivor Karamoan, I don't know. It's a very boring pre-merge. And then it gets ugly in a way that I don't really, you know, especially with the whole Brandon Hance exit. And then Philip grates on you. And then Dawn grates on you. I mean, it ends well with Cochran, you know, at the end. But yeah, it was just a season that kind of grated on me toward the end. And I just, for all the buildup that it had, the Philippines was such a good season before that. I think Karamoan was kind of a letdown.
Hmm. Yeah. See, I actually like Karamoan, because I think it gave you some of the best of both worlds. And one of the things I guess I'll say, which will kind of segue into some of my worst, Survivor works best when it's not ugly reality television.
Yeah.
Because obviously some people, you know, harp on the premise, oh, these people are going to go starve on an island for money, and you can make it sound kind of crass. And in some ways it is, but really the show is really well crafted, and it steers away from a lot of the ugliness that a lot of reality television tends to wallow in, which is one of the things I've always appreciated it. And this season, that season does have some ugliness. I'd agree with you there. But I think it has a really compelling second half. So it's interesting that you mentioned that, because that was actually on my list of underrated seasons.
Oh, really?
I thought because I think, you know, yes, the Brandon Hance thing is a little, his meltdown is a little, I didn't like it as much the second time, I guess is what I'll say, especially if, you know, you're in the Survivor fan community and you kind of know a little bit about Brandon Hance as a person, and, you know, what you're watching isn't, you know, kind of, there's some more stuff going on that I think the show's going to admit, but, So with that, I'll say, you know, there's a couple of seasons that I don't enjoy watching because there's some uglier moments. We mentioned Game Changers has a moment that I think, while it turned into a very positive thing, I think in a lot of ways, there's some ugliness behind it that I think wasn't what I, you know, go to Survivor for. There's a couple of other seasons that are like that. Survivor Koh Rong has a lot of that. Yeah. Season 30, Worlds Apart has a lot of that. And Thailand, as you mentioned, has a lot of that. But I would say, so yeah, if you're kind of avoiding season, if that's not what you want to get out of your reality television, I understand that. So I'd avoid those. But I would say, just to me, the flat out worst season for me is Survivor Nicaragua. There are
some enjoyable laugh out loud moments in Nicaragua.
there are a couple, but not enough to warrant, again, on a rewatch, there is, oh boy. The casting is not great.
No.
The strategy is non-existent. It's a rough rewatch. And so
there's probably only two or three people in that cast that are actually playing the game.
Right. You know, and you can always kind of evidence when Survivor knows they're onto something based on how frequently they bring players back. And I believe they've only brought one player back from Nicaragua.
I think so.
And so that kind of tells you something. not great. So there you go. So there's a couple to avoid, but hey, there's 38 seasons total. There's plenty of great stuff.
And
as I said, even a season like Nicaragua, which is like maybe the worst Survivor season, still I think is a better than a lot of the stuff out there.
Better than a season of Big Brother. Sorry, Craig.
absolutely. All right, so let's move on then. And we've talked about a couple of people, but are there any particular characters or players? However, it's interesting because some people call them characters, some people call them players, and it's like, well, you know, that's the yin and yang of reality TV. Yeah. TV is, we know we're watching edited versions of real people, but they're still real people. So characters, players, however you want to call them, who are some of your favorite survivors?
I love Ceri Fields. Ceri is one of my top players of all time. That's another season that's underrated. I love Survivor Panama. It's got great, just for Ceri and Shane, just for the two of them, they make that scene. But for someone, and Probst always loves to, you know, make her, you know, the woman who got off the couch, you know, and got up and played Survivor, which really only, you know, was her story that first season. Then she comes back and fans versus favorites, and it's just a boss the whole time. Parvati and Amanda got a lot of the credit that really Ceri deserved, I felt like, in Micronesia. And then she comes back in Heroes versus Villains and is, you know, seen as a total threat and goes out early. But then comes back in Game Changers and could have won had she not been part of Idolgeddon. There always has to be some sort of weird voodoo to get Ceri out of the game. She either loses by a fire making competition or some weird twist or something like that. But just somebody who's a wonderful character, a person that you root for, but is also smart and does excellent gameplay.
Yeah, no, if you can't like Ceri, you can't like Survivor. I don't know. She may be the most universally beloved Survivor player of all time.
Probably.
For a lot of reasons. I mean, she's a great player. I think she's that underdog. She's never won. So I think people would just love to just put her on a season against 19 dodos so she can run through them, right? And just get that.
They did that for Boston Rob.
They absolutely did. Yeah, they 100% did. But you know, so you do it for you can do it for Suri. I mentioned Rob Cesternino, who I'm such a fan of his because obviously his podcasting stuff has happened, but he was such a funny character and was not like the brawniest guy out there, but he was clever and he was witty and he could figure out ways and just figured out a way to maneuver himself into a position where he really could have won that season had he won that final immunity challenge. So I think he's won. Those two were, I think, early Suri and Rob both kind of vie for the best players to never win.
Yeah.
Because he comes back in All-Stars and he's an early boot, very, very sadly. Away from that, you mentioned Parvati and she was on Cook Islands, and that brings me to maybe one of my favorite characters, because I don't know if he's a great player, but I love this character, and that's Jonathan Penner.
I love Penner.
Penner is very funny. He is a great, and one of the things you need for reality television is good people, good storytellers who can give good sound bites and explain what's going on in an interesting way. And I think in a lot of ways he lays the template for a lot of the future really good, storytellers in Survivor, because he's able in his confessionals to lay things out, and he's really funny and witty. He never wins. But he had a couple of shots there. But he's personally one of my favorites. And then, Maybe my favorite Survivor beyond Survivor is probably Twitter Queen Eliza Orlins. She is Eliza, who's one of the best jurors of all time.
Yes.
Is also just somebody whose personality, I think I'd love to see her back. She hasn't been back since Micronesia. Oh. So I think she was gone way too soon from Amazing Race.
Yeah. Yeah, the one person who I always root for, but he always screws it up for himself, is Malcolm. Every single time, he screws it up for himself in Philippines. He doesn't care a Moen, and then, he was the victim of a bad twist in Game Changers. But he's a guy who's a physically fit, good challenge player, but is also good at strategy. He's a good storyteller. He's kind of the full package too. So.
Yeah, I would agree. I think he would be the template for like a perfect Survivor player in a lot of ways, because he's very athletic, but he's not like a challenge monster. He's incredibly social. He's very likable. He's got a good strategic mind, which you don't often see. A lot of times, if you got kind of those, young, fit, good-looking guys, they're really kind of really great at challenges, but maybe not so good at other things. Mm-hmm. Some of the more iconic players like that are like a player like Ozzy and Joe, who was just on this previous season, as guys who you root for because they can do such amazing athletic things. But then when it comes down to making the plays or making the strategic moves they need to, they don't really have the chops.
One old school great just character, I don't know about player, but character that I love is Big Tom. one of the reasons to go back and watch Survivor Africa is just for Big Tom. He just just a really, really fun character. We really haven't seen anyone quite like Big Tom since then. And he's on All-Stars too, and he's one of the high points of All-Stars. So.
Yeah, and he's a lot savvier at the game than you think he's going to be, which I think the closest we've ever gotten to Big Tom in later seasons is Keith Nail from San Juan del Sur, and then he plays on Second Chance because he does have that kind of good old boy personality. The difference is Keith has, I don't think, still knows how to play Survivor.
Right. Yeah, Tom actually was savvy.
Yeah. Tom, I think, could have won had a couple of things gone his way in either of his seasons, really. Yeah. And he at one point was the record holder for most days played in Survivor.
Oh, yeah.
Because he goes deep in both of his seasons. I would say if I'm going to look at a list, and we talk about Tony, we talked about him a little bit with Kagyan, and just he's such, he is, you know, he is such good television mixed in with a great gameplay. I don't know if he can ever win again because he's so brash and so broad. But I think it's kind of a miracle he won Kagehan. But man, he's you can bring him back as many times as you want. I'm good with that because he's
for the two episodes he's in Game Changers, that was still beautiful television.
So that's just a couple. I mean, we could probably go on and on about Great Play, but you know, there's a lot that we could mention, but I think that's a good sampling. So let's dive into a little bit of controversy. Let's talk before we move on to seasons 39 and 40. Let's take a minute to talk about season 38, because for the Survivor fans, I think they gave Game of Thrones a run for their money in terms of alienating a fan base with this last season.
Yes, they did.
So for those of you who are not familiar, season 38 featured a change to the format called the Edge of Extinction, where voted players would go live on an even more sparse island with even fewer supplies. And they would exist there until an unknown time, at which point they could compete in a challenge to get back into the game. Now, you could do that, unlike in previous seasons, where you could do that up to the merge and then you were gone. Or there were players who were in the game from the very – who were voted out on day three, that by day 39 or I guess it was day 35 or 6 mm-hmm. had an opportunity to play and get back into the game. So one of those players, Chris Underwood, gets voted out. He's voted out on day – is it day eight?
Eight. I think
he's,
so.
Yeah, he's the third person voted out of the season. He gets voted out on day eight. He wins the day 35 challenge, re-enters the game, and somehow makes it to the end and wins. So you have a player who existed for eight, who didn't, you know, I guess, let me ask you that question, Brandon, before we dive into it. What was your initial thoughts on the twist and how it played out?
Well, like we had mentioned before, I'm pretty, I've learned to not be so hard on the twists when I first hear about them, because I said it could turn out fine. But then as I think I even texted you, I said, wait, this means every single player on the season could still have a chance to win in the finale of Survivor of the season. And then I think I felt at some point by the time we got to the finale, there would have been more people who would have quit and would have left. Mm-hmm. I think we had too many people still in play in the finale, and it just got kind of, I don't know, the whole season felt disjointed. I think because we had so many people on Edge of Extinction, we weren't able to give the full story on everybody. So you didn't feel very, we had been with all the people that had been playing the actual game for most of the season. Then in comes the group of people at the very end, and suddenly you have to start caring about their story in the very last show. Mm-hmm. So that's what felt disjointed to me.
Yeah, and I like that you use the phrase actual game, because I think that's been one of the biggest points of contention between people who have hated the season and people who have defended it, in that is Edge of Extinction part of the game? And some people would say, no, you got voted out. You basically sat in a waiting room until you were able to compete in a challenge to get back in. Now, obviously, it's a little bit more complex than that. You know, the sparseness and the conditions that they had to endure were certainly rough. The elements were absolutely could be brutal. And here's some of these castaways who have come back, who lived on the Edge of Extinction. It really seemed like it was a fairly harrowing experience for some people. Mm-hmm. So that said, is that the game? And in that season, yeah, it is. It was the game. Yeah. And so when Chris wins, there's a lot of people that say, well, he only played the game for 8 days at the beginning, 2 days at the end, or 3 days at the end, and that's it. And he somehow wins. And I get that. I think it's a twist that sounded much better on paper than it did in practice. Because to your point, Brandon, we didn't get to see any of the Edge of a lot of from Edge of Extinction. We didn't get to we would get to see maybe two or three scenes at best, maybe a whole minute or two of airtime devoted to what was going on Edge of Extinction. And so essentially everything from episode 3 when Chris gets voted off to episode 14, which was the finale, is rendered moot. You're left with a season where there's no real narrative flow because the winner, who the season usually is about, isn't in the show for 11 episodes.
Right.
It's insane to think about.
And the player who we all have been invested in, Rick Devons, mm-hmm. who, you know, and leading up to this, it's like his story, you know, it's sort of like some major, like, Hitchcockian twist at the end. Like, wait, so we've invested all the time in this guy, but it really was about this guy.
Mm-hmm. It's very similar to kind of what you mentioned, Samoa, where we spend so much time with Russell that we think his win is kind of locked in, and then at the last minute he loses. But at least Natalie
was in the game the whole time.
Right, and we could see little clips. It was. I mean, this came out the same week, right in between the last two episodes of Game of Thrones, and the parallels are frightening.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, this seemed out of nowhere. This seemed unearned. Unearned was a word that I heard a lot about the Game of Thrones. And I was like, you people ain't watching Survivor right now, because this finale felt totally unearned because we didn't see Chris until the last episode. Yeah. And no fault
of Chris's at all. He played the game he had to play. But this is an experiment that Survivor tried. I don't think it succeeded. I hope they never do it again.
100%. Yeah. And I think, you know, and exactly. And Chris did exactly what he should have done. And he played the game that was in front of him, and he did what he had to do. And ultimately, he got voted, you know, to win the game by a group of people, the bulk of whom he had spent 20 some days building relationships with, which again is another thing you could argue that is an absolute weakness of the game, of the twist, is that, you know, how could you blame those people for voting for him after seeing him go? And then you've also heard in postseason interviews that they all sat together and kind of got to plot about, okay, if you got back into the game, here's what you do. So, yeah, they coached him. They wanted him to win. They got him back in the game. He did, and he won. So I don't blame.
Yeah,
I don't blame anybody in the cast on that. I think it was, as you said, a twist that they tried once and never should repeat again.
Yeah, yeah, and you're free to experiment, but they've never brought back the Medallion of Power. I hope they never bring back the Edge of Extinction.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, that's the thing with when you experiment with the format, some things work and some things don't. Yeah. And to go back to what we said, that's the beauty of Survivor is, some seasons, the theme's a dud, or the cast's a dud, or the twist is a dud. Hope springs eternal. Every new season, there's something, you know, it's not going to be exactly the same. So if you don't like one thing, it'll change.
Right.
So with that, let's talk about what we've got coming up. In the fall, we've got season 39, which is Survivor Island of the Idols.
It just makes you laugh.
It does. It's one of those themes that it's hard to say without rolling your eyes. It's akin to heroes versus hustlers, and Ghost Island, and Millennials versus Gen X. Most of those seasons worked out well. So what I know a lot of people online were concerned about right off the bat was that this season, because it was called Island of the Idols, was going to involve like a lot more immunity idols than what is already in the game. Mm-hmm. And some people say, you know, in earlier seasons they added one, later seasons they added one or two, and now there's like up to three that could be floating in the game kind of at any time, which led to a real big problem, as you pointed out, in Survivor Game Changers. But what they really mean by Island of the Idols is the return of two iconic players in Sandra, two-time winner Sandra, and one-time winner, four-time player Boston Rob, only not as players this time. They are existing on an island together, which I hope we get a lot of footage of, because that sounds interesting.
The two of them are such good TV. I hope that they should just have like a 24/7 camera and a live feed the whole time.
Right. Yeah. And apparently if you win challenges, if you win rewards, you get to go to this island where you can be coached or get advice from these two people. So that sounds interesting to me. I'm not quite sure how that works in theory, or how it works in practice. I know the title is just eye roll worthy and cringe inducing, but what are your early thoughts about season 39?
Well, I like Boston Rob and Sandra. I like the fact that there are two returning players that are not actually playing. They don't have a chance to win. They're just being used as mentors. Mm-hmm. How that is going, like you said, how that is going to be executed has yet to be seen. But I'm very curious as to how the game goes on, how they're going to be utilized. Are they going to, counsel the jury on how to vote or anything like that? You know, well, once we get past the merge, how is that going to work? I have to see it to really know if I like it or not.
Yeah. And it's such an odd idea because, yeah, you're right. I don't know how are they going to, there's two things they can impact. They can impact the gameplay and they can just impact the viewing experience. And I know a lot of people are already skittish enough to say, oh, they're going to suck up all the airtime and we're not going to get to spend any time with these new players, which was one of the criticisms about Edge of Extinction, because you had four returning players, who got a lot of airtime and none of them made it that deep into the game. Mm-hmm. And so that was, again, one of the criticisms of that season is you didn't get to know a lot of players because of the returnees. I actually think you didn't get to know a lot of the players because the person that won wasn't in the game for 21 days, but I digress. I'll also be curious to see, does their advice really impact the game one way or another? Do they help people make certain choices? Mm-hmm. And how much of the time are we going to spend with them? I think it's going to be fairly minimal. If they're on this kind of separate island, we might, we'll see them for a couple of minutes at a time. If we're spending a lot of time watching them build a shelter or live in a fort as opposed to the actual gameplay, I can tell you I'm sure a lot of people will be on Twitter that evening enraged.
Oh, yeah. But if we get, if we get most gameplay and we just get a nice few good sound bites from Boston Rob and Sander each episode, that would make me happy.
Yeah. And they're both very good narrators. They give good confessionals. So I think there'll be people that'll also help the production in some ways in terms of, oh, this is what I see and this is what's going on.
Yeah.
Which you don't always get. Sometimes there are really interesting people that you'll hear when you look at, pre-show bios or pre-show interviews, and then they just don't, for whatever reason, click on screen and they're not that interesting to watch. So, that ensures that even if the less interesting players make it farther in the game, there'll at least be a couple of interesting characters to follow. So there's something to that, but that sets up 39. And then in the spring, what I think everybody's looking forward to in the Survivor community is season 40. So at this point, what I'll tell you is if you are, we're not going to talk spoilers in terms of, who's going to get kicked out or who wins. They're actually filming it as we're speaking, so we don't even know. But if you are the type of person who doesn't want to know anything about it till it's officially announced, maybe skip ahead about 2-3 minutes and till we wrap up. But what we have heard, those of us who follow the websites know that season 40 is the long awaited, long hoped for, much hyped all winners season. We know that it's a cast of 20 former winners, and they're going to duke it out. And the cast list leaked a couple of weeks ago, and some really interesting choices, some really interesting omissions. So maybe we'll come back and do a preview of what we hope to see for season 40 later on. But just now, let's just talk about the initial impressions of this cast from what we know, Brandon.
Well, an all-winter season is something I never thought we would get just because, Jeff Probst seemed like he was against it. But from the list of people, it's a nice mix. It's kind of an older cast, which will be interesting. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I think the biggest omission that most people will talk about is the fact that we don't have the first winner, Richard Hatch, in the season, which you always kind of felt like an all-winter season would be the season to bring him back on. However, as you think about it, circumstances being what they are with him, might have prevented him from leaving the country or might have prevented CBS from wanting to cast him, which one of those things I know was settled in court. There's another aspect which I don't know is ever settled or not.
Yes. Yeah. So for, I guess, Richard Hatch has been a very controversial person outside of Survivor. He famously went to prison for some time for not paying the taxes on his winnings. There's a really, again, we talk about All Stars being an ugly season, and this is one of the moments where there was kind of an ugly incident where Richard Hatch, who was famous for being nude on the show and walking around and having no problem as part of his strategy is to just walk around naked, decided he would be nude in a challenge and had debated again. And this is all things that are debated as contact incidental or not with a female contestant who he had a negative history with. So I can totally understand. I can understand the disappointment in doing an all winter season and not having the first winner, especially somebody who I think if he doesn't win that first season, I don't know if Survivor still exists to this day because he did give the template for what makes this show so good. That said, I totally understand why you would not want to have to talk about that incident ever again if you're CBS.
Sure.
And regardless of how it was settled, regardless of who's right and who is wrong or what exactly happened, the mere idea of having to bring it up, again, I can see Survivor just CBS saying, sorry, we're dealing with enough stuff in the culture right now. Mm-hmm. We are talking about inappropriate touching and comments and contact and all of that, that in this era, you could see why they would want to pass on him.
Yeah. Yeah. But overall, a really good cast. I think I mentioned, I was surprised if they didn't cast Richard, but we don't have the first female winner. We don't have Tina, mm-hmm. but I, you know, the more and more I thought about it, and Tina said it before, she's kind of had the perfect Survivor arc. She's won, she's come back and been voted off first, and then she mm-hmm. came back in Blood versus Water and almost won. So she's mm-hmm. had a great Survivor story. So that might have been the reason for not bringing her back, but also there's a lot of great female winners that we haven't been brought back, and she's been brought back twice. So I'm excited to see some of these people.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that that's a, I would agree 100%. I think that, you know, as much as an iconic player Tina is, we've gotten to see her three times now. And there's a lot of these winners we're only seeing for the second time.
Right.
So a couple of people were seen for the third time, but some of these winners that we're seeing, I think are really interesting. So I'm really excited about the cast. And obviously you've got arguably maybe the four greatest players from a lot of people's perspective in this game, in Boston Rob, in Parvati, in Kim Spradlin, in Sandra.
Yeah.
Those are names that get brought up a lot in conversation of being the best of the best.
And some of these winners have been hotly debated because a lot of people will say, well, they only won because there wasn't anybody else really playing against them. So this would be a chance to really test their mettle and to see if, you know, if their win was legitimate or not.
Yes, absolutely. And so that's something that I think is really fun. That'll be fun to see. It'll be fun to see some old school winners come back and try to play the new
I'm thrilled to see Ethan Zahn.
Yeah. I'm thrilled to see Ethan. I'm really excited to see Yul Kwan come back. I think he's a player that I don't think we ever thought would come back to play. So I think there's a lot of really cool stuff. There's a lot of good potential, and a lot of the modern players that they've got on this list, I think is really interesting. And so I think it's a good mix of old school and new school.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about it. You know, I'm a little bummed about, I guess I shouldn't say, you know what? I'm not bummed. I'm at peace with no Richard Hatch. And aside from that, I think, they kind of nailed it on a lot of these. There's not a, you know, a lot of other players that I, you know, I'd want to see again. So I'm excited for season four.
We didn't bring back Fabio, but you know.
No, exactly. We didn't bring back Fabio, no Natalie White.
No Bob Crowley.
Yeah, exactly. We're not seeing, all the players that we're seeing, I think, are intriguing. I don't think there's any duds on this list. So I'm excited about that. I'm looking forward to it. That's coming up in the spring. But before that, we got another winner is going to be crowned, season 39, Island of the Idols, coming out mid-September. So I'm excited. I'm excited about what the future holds for Survivor. And I hope this is another reason we wanted to do this podcast, because we know that season 40 is going to be big, and season 39, I think, is going to set the table a little bit of that, because with Boston Rob and Sandra having a presence in 39, and then eventually, I think that's part of the reason they're on 39 was so that they could get them for 40. But, I think we're setting up for a really good year of Survivor. So I'm excited about that.
Absolutely. I think this will, every 10 seasons or so, it's almost like, is Survivor coming to an end? Is this going to be the club? But then you get a season that just sort of rejuvenates everything. And I think 39 and 40 are going to set that template. And who knows, we may be talking about Survivor 50.
I think we do. I really do. I mean, I think it's 5 seasons away. I honestly think this show can go to 50 seasons, especially in the modern landscape. This is, again, a show that does really well live because it's such a big deal on Twitter. Survivor Twitter is a lot of fun. I think there's a lot of fun. it's one of the more fun Twitters. There's an immediacy to it that a lot of television shows don't have anymore.
True.
I think Survivor's got legs to go to season 50, whether Jeff Probst is part of it or not. Who knows? Right. I hope he is for a while, because I do think he's very good at his job. I know people get tired of him or think he's got too much power at this point in the show. I think what they've done works, and what they've done continues to work. And so I think he deserves all the credit and all the spoils that he has been getting.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Right. It wouldn't be Survivor without Jeff Probst, as much as you hate to admit it sometimes.
Yeah. So my thought is that at some point he's going to be replaced by Rick Devens.
That I could get behind.
And Twitter's you want to see Survivor Twitter explode. He retires and Rick Devens becomes your new Survivor host. So. Okay, but we'll table that discussion for the day that happens. But Brandon, thank you for coming on. I think this is
great. We've been talking about this for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm glad we finally get to do it. And let us know what you think. Do you want to hear more Survivor talk? Brandon and I are always game. I think we can at least squeeze out maybe a couple of pre and post season episodes, so we kind of talk about it a little bit. That might be fun. In the meantime, you can. While you're waiting for that, you can find everything else that we're doing by going to our website, frnpod.com. You can also find us on nprillinois.org, and you can find us on our Facebook page, the Front Row Network. We've got all sorts of stuff up there. We've got My Guilty Pleasure episodes. You've got Brandon's classics, full disclosures, everything that we're doing. You'll know about it by going on to those three places and finding us. And as always, please like and subscribe to the podcast. That way you'll be up to date on everything that we're getting and everything that we're doing. I know all sorts of stuff is kicking up into high gear. You can follow me personally on Twitter at the fake Lou Hare, or you can follow the Front Row Network on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z. Brandon, do you got anything else you want to plug?
No, just keep looking for classics. I took a little hiatus here for a few months ago because I was directing two musicals back to back, but I'm back now and ready to get back into it. And Scott and I hopefully be starting up Zonisodes again. So always be on the lookout on Facebook, and we'll be making those announcements.
Cool. All right. Well, we want to thank everybody for listening in, and enjoy the upcoming season of Survivor. Enjoy everything that we're doing. And so until next time, for the Front Row Network, I'm Lou Hare.
I'm Brandon Davis.
And we'll see you in the front row.